Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, representing 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for workplace best practices for the media, lawmakers, and Florida's human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
To repeal or not to repeal? The question whether to scale back rules governing where medical facilities can be built isn't easy to answer.
We were just talking about access, but I just want to comment that competition does not necessarily mean quality.
Also tonight, while lawmakers consider whether to approve a new gambling agreement between the state and Seminole Tribe, the governor warns jobs hang in the balance.
My understanding, if it's not renewed, then it would impact about, 3,500 jobs? 3,600 jobs.
We'll also get the latest on public support for private sports facilities, efforts to clamp down on public official corruption, and attempts to get a bit more pay for state workers. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the start of week four of the 2016 Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. As lawmakers grapple with health care costs, they're taking another look at rules, called Certificates of Need, governing where health care centers can be built. Lynn Hatter reports a scaled-down version of a bill addressing Certificates of Need is in play, but it's not without controversy.
The federal government put Certificate of Need laws in place in the 1970s. The goal was to limit healthcare costs, but some say those laws are now out of date, as the reimbursement systems have changed. Today, Certificate of Need is seen by many as a barrier to care, not a protector of it. Republican Senator Don Gates says Certificate of Need needs to be revised.
The only remaining reason for CON regulations is to restrict competition or to prevent cherry picking, a new provider or new service picking off paying patients and leaving current providers with a disproportionate amount of unreimbursed charity care.
But the decision to roll back some of the Certificate of Need laws is not without controversy. The Florida House is pushing a measure to fully repeal CON for hospitals, leading to the concern that Gates cited. But health providers, including two of the state's major hospital associations, say the laws are still needed in order to protect quality. Gates' bill stops short of a full repeal, and it would add another exemption to the regulatory system based on the amount of charity care a center provides. And if that center doesn't serve uninsured patients, it could face a financial fine. But Tampa Senator Arthenia Joyner worries the language is duplicative.
My concern was that it would allow the creation or the expansion of hospitals in neighborhoods that would go to wealthy neighborhoods, and non-wealthy neighborhoods then would not benefit.
And fellow Democratic Senator Eleanor Sobel is also concerned.
We were just talking about access, but I just want to comment that competition does not necessarily mean quality.
We believe CON does help provide access to care. CON still has a role in helping patients access services regardless of economic status, and it helps to avoid concentrating hospital care in only highly populated or economically enriched areas.
That's Bill Bell with the Florida Hospital Association. But on the other side, Republican Senator Denise Grimsley, a hospital administrator herself, worries the proposed penalties attached to Gates's bill are too strict.
And President Gates, I'll be the first one to say that I think our current CON process is burdensome, it's difficult, and it's very costly, and we have to pass that on. And eventually it gets passed on to the patient. I'm not sure that what you've outlined here is really much better. It appears punitive to me, to the providers, and in the absence of Medicaid expansion, it seems like it still puts all the burden of charity care on the provider rather than any falling back on the state.
Grimsley says it's not fair to punish healthcare centers if the people it treats don't receive charity care, but she does plan to support Gates' proposal. And Gates argues his proposition is better than the House's full repeal.
Let me just hit a couple of the points that were made by testifiers and by members in debate. The concern for indigent care is a real one. If this bill would reduce indigent care or reduce access to indigent care, I would not be in favor of it.
Gates cites a 2014 report from the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. That study found certificate of need rules do little to increase access to health care for the poor, but they do limit the supply of such services. The federal government repealed its certificate of need mandate in 1987, but the majority of states still have rules in place. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
In an effort to promote a proposed gaming agreement between Florida and the Seminole Indian Tribe, Governor Rick Scott and representatives from the tribe met today. The group talked about the benefits of the compact, which include more money, more jobs, as well as a chance to retain the jobs the Seminole casinos currently provide. And we get the latest on this story from Regan McCarthy.
Yes, sir.
As the governor takes his seat around a conference table for a presentation on the compact and a chance to hear from the employees whose jobs hang in the balance, he and tribe leaders engage in a little chit-chat about what comes next.
But anyway, welcome, and hopefully you got some good news for us today.
But while the governor insists the agreement is the best thing for the state, he stops short of delivering the good news tribe members are hoping for.
As you know, the process is that we worked hard with y'all to get this signed, and we did. But now it's up to the legislature. It's over $3 billion over 7 years, $3 billion over 7 years, with, and it continues after that. The last compact was around $1 billion.
Scott says to him, jobs are one of the most important pieces of the proposed gambling agreement. He says getting the state, in his words, back to work has been his goal since 2010.
This compact that I know the Seminoles and my office worked hard to make sure happened will have a positive impact on job growth. My understanding, if it's not renewed, then it would impact about, 3,500 jobs? 3,600 jobs. And if it is approved by the legislature, would add about 4,500 direct and indirect, 4,800, I guess, direct and indirect permanent jobs, and another 14,500 direct and indirect construction jobs.
During his visit, Scott heard from Seminole casino employees like Patricia Rodriguez, who say they're worried about what will happen if the legislature doesn't approve the compact. Rodriguez, who is a table games manager, was overcome by emotions when she told Scott about the opportunities her job with the tribe has afforded her.
This company has given me the opportunity to provide for my children, roof, clothes.
Have you changed jobs?
What?
Have you had the same job the whole time, or have you changed?
No, well, I have been promoted with it. This is a great thing about this company. You have, not only were anybody anywhere else, there's no opportunity for growth. I have been able to grow here. So, and I continue to hope so and stay here for a long time.
Yeah, 2008, it was hard to get a job in Florida.
Anywhere in the country.
Yeah.
So anywhere in the country. And not only that, if you got a job, not so stable. So
right.
I was lucky enough, thanks to the tribe, thanks to the Seminoles.
The Seminoles estimate table games, blackjack specifically, make up about 30% of the play in their casinos. The portion of the compact that lets the tribe offer blackjack has expired. And if the new compact isn't approved, officials say they could end up having to shut the tables down. That means workers like Rodriguez could lose their jobs. And Seminole Gaming president and CEO Jim Allen says the reach of the table game shutdown could go even further. For example, he says the jobs of workers at upscale casino restaurants could be cut as well.
You know, a lot of the table game customers, they are traditionally, not just in our operations, but throughout the United States, they are traditionally comped more than, say, a slot customer. Well, don't get me in trouble with slot customers, but the reality is that's the ripple effect.
Allen says table game customers are a different clientele. And he says before the tribe could offer the games, it didn't have all the restaurants it does now. If the new compact gets legislative approval, the Seminoles will be allowed to continue banked card games such as blackjack and will add craps and roulette to their current offerings. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
With the backing of physician groups and small businesses, a Senate committee today approved a bill aimed at clearing the way for what's called direct primary care agreements in Florida. The Senate Health Policy Committee approved the measure, sponsored by Republican Senator Denise Grimsley of Sebring. A House version filed by Republican Representative Kerry Pigman from Avon Park has sailed through committees and is ready to go to the full House. Under direct primary care agreements, patients or their employers would pay monthly fees to doctors or other health care providers to cover routine medical care. The agreements would carve out the role of insurers in such care. The Senate and House bills would make clear that the agreements are not insurance and are not subject to insurance laws. That's a move supporters say could help lead to the use of the agreements. Physician groups, including the Florida Medical Association, support the bill, as does the National Federation of Independent Business, which represents small business owners. The Senate committee added an amendment today that also would apply the bill to chiropractors. Still to come on Capitol Report, lawmakers took a swing at blocking expensive stadium deals, but the proposal didn't quite make it out of the park.
To quote a famous movie, if you build it, they will come. In this case, governments don't need to build it for them to come.
Once again, a powerful state lawmaker has tried to clamp down on official corruption, and once again, his crusade has wound up on a legislative sidetrack where it may simply waste away.
And now maybe that's, you know, how we sell newspapers these days. I don't know. But I'm just not, you know, I'm rebelling at that as much as anything, that I just think it's wrong.
And Florida lawmakers are taking the first steps in giving state employees a raise.
When there are instances where a class of employee are demonstrably underpaid relative to peers, you have to step up and deal with that and take care of your people.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org.
A plan to block local governments from striking sweetheart deals with sports franchises appears dead. Nick Evans reports the measure stalled in a House Economic Development Committee today.
Florida has 9 professional sports teams across baseball, basketball, football, and hockey. There's also soccer, minor league teams, and 16 baseball franchises during spring training. All of those need facilities, stadiums, and local governments sometimes offer favorable agreements to attract teams to their area. Now, that's the nice way of saying it, but here's how highly Republican Representative Brian Avila describes it.
In the past, sports franchises and local governments have entered into financial agreements that have been detrimental to taxpayers. This bill will put an end to that behavior and ensure that those tax dollars are being used appropriately.
Avila's measure prohibits franchises from building on public land, and requires land purchased for a stadium be sold at fair market value. Committee Chair Frank Artilis, a Republican from Miami, explains the issue hits close to home for lawmakers like he and Avila.
Representative Avila, I do support your bill. The reason being is because of the issues that we have dealt with in Miami-Dade County, where the taxpayers are basically on the hook for the Miami Marlins Stadium. I think the final tab is going to be $3 billion that is going to be paid by taxpayers.
And Avila says in light of Florida's business climate, those deals really shouldn't be necessary.
You have less taxes, less regulations. I think that Orlando City and the Beckham Group have proven that you don't need taxpayer funds in order to set up shop in a community. You don't need that.
Both are soccer franchises that have raised private funds instead of relying on public support from local governments. But Avila's proposal met significant pushback in committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative, for bringing your bill. I understand your problem.
This is Sarasota Republican Ray Pilon.
I also understand that the city and county of Sarasota has a very successful spring training renovated stadium that could have not been done without the Baltimore Orioles.
Pilon says Avila's measure might address a problem for the Miami area, but it's not a struggle for the rest of the state. St. Cloud Republican Mike LaRosa agrees the measure's too broad, but he's not speaking in terms of geography.
I represent an area, 65% of my district is in Osceola County, and I notice in here it says Professional Rodeo Cowboy Association. In Osceola County, we take our rodeos very serious.
He draws a distinction between the rodeo and major sports teams.
And, you know, maybe when we're talking about national franchises like the Miami Dolphins, like the Miami Heat, which I'm big fans of, but I understand that adding taxpayer dollars to those type of facilities would be harmful. But when it comes down to the small details, it hurts my district. It hurts our rodeos, and it's certainly something I don't want to go back home and say, hey, guys, we passed great legislation, but here's some details that ultimately hurt us down at home. So
LaRosa says he'll work with Avila on language to exempt rodeos, but it appears that won't be necessary.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to present this bill in committee today. At this time, I would like to continue working on this language and would ask that the bill be temporarily postponed.
That might sound like living to fight another day, but the postponement means Avila's bill is effectively toast. That's because of this.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for being an excellent committee. This is our last committee.
That's right. Some committees are already closing up shop. And because Avila's bill doesn't have a Senate companion, it doesn't have a likely path forward. It could still be tacked on to another measure as an amendment, but at this point, the prospects are slim. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A North Florida senator briefly halted his crusade today to root out government corruption when he temporarily postponed his legislation. Former Senate President Don Gates of Niceville wants to clamp down on waste, fraud, and abuse, but that effort is testing the limits of his considerable clout, as we hear from Jim Ash.
If everything had gone according to plan, Gates would have presented a watered-down ethics bill to the Senate Government Oversight and Accountability Committee on Monday. The bill is called, simply enough, Government Accountability, but it's not the slam dunk the name suggests. At the last minute, the bill was yanked from the agenda and put on temporary hold. That's not a good sign for supporters, admits Ben Wilcox, a lobbyist for Common Cause of Florida.
It is always a difficult task to get these ethics and anti-corruption bills moving through the legislature, and so we appreciate the legislature taking the time to try to work it out and hopefully move the bill forward.
Gates and other lawmakers have reforms written into a handful of bills in a shotgun strategy that makes it confusing to track and, supporters hope, difficult to defeat. But when the legislation first hit government oversight and accountability a few weeks ago, Gates ran into a buzzsaw in the form of fellow Republican and political rival Jack Latvala of Clearwater.
Senator Gates, I know how to read.
Well, I understand that, Senator Latvala.
I'm looking for an explanation in layman's language that we can all understand, rather than just rereading the amendment.
Among other things, Gates is determined to get rid of a legal speed bump for prosecutors. Under current law, even catching a crooked politician on tape taking a bribe isn't enough. The law says the state must also prove the suspect acted with, quote, corrupt intent. Essentially, Gates says, that means proving what the criminal was thinking.
Under current law, a state attorney not only has to prove that a bribe or payoff was offered or accepted, but must also prove that there was malicious intent.
Gates wants that changed so a prosecutor only has to prove that the suspect acted, quote, knowingly. But Latvala and other critics are worried about setting the bar too low. 2 weeks ago, they complained a contractor would wind up indicted for giving a legislator a Thanksgiving turkey. Senator Alan Hayes of Umatilla compares it to a gift ban.
I want our industry to continue to be able to enjoy social life.
And Gates has another problem. One of his biggest allies is proving to be a liability. Gannett Coe Inc., publisher of USA Today and three Florida newspapers, called for the ethics changes in the wake of a scandal at the Canaveral Port Authority. But when the company took the unusual step of sending Florida Today editorial writer Matt Reed to testify for the bill, Latvala complained about media intimidation.
And now maybe that's, you know, how we sell newspapers these days. I don't know. But I'm just not, you know, I'm rebelling at that as much as anything, that I just think it's wrong.
And he's not alone. Here's Republican John Legge of Lutz.
I've never been in this process before where a reporter is actually advocating for law as a news agency, not for the industry.
Reid essentially told the committee his bosses are tired of legislative inaction.
And after 5 years of editorializing and writing for change and not seeing anything happen on behalf of our readers.
Gates wants to make a host of other changes, too. One of them would give the Florida Commission on Ethics the power to initiate its own investigations. Common Cause's Wilcox thinks a stronger watchdog would have a significant deterrent effect.
Florida Commission on Ethics is perceived by the public as being weak, and giving the Commission on Ethics the ability to self-initiate an investigation into a possible ethics violation would give the public more confidence.
But even that provision was notably absent Monday from the compromise proposal that was put on hold. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Well, less than a week after the Florida House passed a bill dealing with the statewide regulation of app-based ride-sharing services, a subcommittee today approved a proposal that would set up a regulatory framework in Hillsborough County. Majority Leader Dana Young, Republican of Tampa, said the proposal is similar to the statewide measure sponsored by Representative Matt Gaetz, Republican of Fort Walton Beach. Young said the bill's needed because of the unique structure of the Hillsborough County Public Transportation Commission, which was created by the legislature back in 1983 and regulates such things as taxicabs and limousines. Regulation of app-based ride-sharing services such as Uber and Lyft has been a high-profile issue in the legislature and in local communities. The bill approved today, in part, would set up a separate permitting system for the app-based services and would set insurance requirements for drivers, according to a House staff analysis. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. A packed agenda faces lawmakers at the Capitol tomorrow, and Ronald J. Eben has some of the highlights.
At 9:15 Tuesday morning, members of the House will smile for the camera. They'll gather in the House floor for a panoramic photograph. The Senate will hold a floor session beginning at 10 and could take up such issues as a proposal filed by Senator Nancy Dietert that would let judges place the best interest of children in adoption cases above biological parents' wishes. The Senate also could consider a proposal that would lead to a Holocaust memorial being built in the Capitol complex. The House Agriculture and Natural Resources Subcommittee will consider a bill that would require an independent study about the effectiveness of manatee speed zones. The House Health Care Appropriations Subcommittee will consider a wide-ranging bill that would increase regulations on abortion clinics and address such issues as prohibition on the sale of fetal tissue. There will be a news conference at 10:30 at the Capitol involving Senate Minority Leader Arthenia Joyner and former Florida State University and NFL football players, who will urge passage of a proposal that would compensate the family of FSU player Devon Darley, who collapsed and died during a 2001 off-season training session. Those are some of the legislative highlights for Tuesday, February 2nd. I'm Ronald J. Eben.
Finally tonight, if you were tuned into last Friday's Capitol Report, you heard one Tallahassee lawmaker hoping that his legislative colleagues would give something a bit more substantial than lip service this year to the poor, beleaguered state government employees who haven't seen a pay raise in some 7 years. Well, wonder of wonders, a bill seeking a 3% pay raise for state employees unanimously passed its first Senate panel today. And as Sasha Cordner reports, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle are mulling over the issue as well.
Senate Democratic Leader Adenia Joyner is the author of the measure that authorizes the pay increase. Her measure changed Monday, requiring state workers must log at least 20 hours a week to be eligible for the pay hike. As in years past, Tallahassee Democratic lawmakers Michelle Raywinkle-Vasalinda and Alan Williams have filed similar bills in the House, doubling that 3% increase. Williams says he's hopeful that some sort of increase is in this year's budget. He also hopes, if it is, the governor sees state workers' increases as a priority, as well as his billion-dollar tax cut package.
At the end of the day, I mean, we cannot have an $80 billion budget and not be able to give pay raises to state employees, but talk about giving, you know, almost $1 billion in tax cuts. I think we can do both. And I think both deserve the proper support. But at the end of the day, you know, when we give pay raises to state employees across the state, it's really economic development. It's a stimulus because they then will go out, spend more money on goods and services for their families that will then support our local businesses.
Some senators have already expressed their support for the pay raises, including Clearwater Republican Senator Jack Ladvalla. He says while it's not in his wheelhouse, he'll continue to pursue pay raises for state workers.
I assure you that I'm going to fight for that. I'm very committed to that.
There are rumors circulating that the House and Senate budget chairs Richard Corcoran and Tom Lee could be working on developing a pay raise package. And Senate President Andy Gardner says he's still amenable to the pay raise idea, though he urged caution.
I don't know if it's systematic as much as, you know, I said back before Christmas that if there's a will to do that, I would be very interested in the salary issue. But again, we have to kind of see, just like the tax package, you have to go through every agency, decide do we have a budget that we're comfortable with, then you really start talking about that tax package.
As for Governor Rick Scott, he has his own ideas on the state employee pay raises.
I think people ought to be paid fairly. We have state workers that work very hard here in Tallahassee and all around the state. What I've proposed is that we have bonus plans tied to performance. I've always believed that. I believe that in business.
Last year, both the House and Senate had agreed on pay raises for certain employees. That included a $2,000 increase for forestry firefighters, which Governor Rick Scott vetoed. Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam, whose agency oversees that area, had expressed disappointment, saying that this year he'll continue to fight it.
They are deserving of this pay increase. They put themselves at risk to protect lives and property in our state, and I hope that we can work that through the process and to a successful conclusion this year.
And the firefighter pay bump is expected to be included again in this year's budget. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at FPR Cap Report, and join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. And from HR Florida State Council, representing 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council, a resource for workplace best practices for the media, lawmakers, and Florida's human resource professionals. HRFlorida.org. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.